We're talking about Generation Drag, the new Discovery Plus Network docuseries about teen drag performers with a Wisconsin connection. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So glad you could be here. The series, it follows five young people speaking candidly about their love of drag, and the parents are navigating how to raise LGBTQ plus kids, and it reveals their worries and apprehensions on how to support them. Join in 800-642-1234. Bailey Mosling of Middleton is 16, transgender, performs as the drag queen Nemo, and is one of the teens profiled in Generation Drag. Bailey, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Good morning. And Dana Mosling, hello, Bailey's mother, licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist. Dana, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, Dana, let me start with you. You know, you knew going into a documentary TV project that you'd have to open up your story, your family's story, obviously Bailey's journey of self-expression to film crews and to their writers and producers and their storylines. What went into that decision of allowing Generation Drag into your home and into your life?
Yeah, so it actually was a process that took, I mean, I'm going to guess it was at least 6 months. I think it was actually a little bit longer than that. And during that process, we really got to understand what the point or vision of the producers were in having this documentary series air. And it was a vision that we felt so strongly about that it really made our decision quite easy, right? And they really wanted to make sure that they were able to provide visibility for other queer youth, to help people understand the complexities of raising a, you know, gender nonconforming kiddo in today's culture, and really just showing the joy that these kids have while they are, you know, engaged in their art form of choice, which is drag.
Bailey, what was that like for you to have your drag journey on camera in very public eye, you know, in that public eye for people to judge? And then, you know, even on camera in very sacred spaces like your own bedroom.
Yeah, it was at first, like when the filming started, it was like a little strange. It was just like after the first day, then I felt like way more comfortable opening up to them. And like, I'm already used to like my drag being on like Instagram and Facebook and different newspapers and different things like that. Having my drag be on TV for other people to like judge. I like when people comment like hateful things, it doesn't really affect me that much. And so, like, for me, it wasn't, like, I don't know. It was different, of course. Mm-hmm. But in a way, it wasn't, like, that different, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But it was, like, just such, like, a cool opportunity to have. And I'm just, like, I'm so grateful that I was able to experience it.
Can you, Bailey, describe the premise? And for people who aren't familiar with Dragutante, what it is?
Yeah, so Dragutante, it provides a stage and a safe place for drag youth to explore drag and to perform. It can, like, there will be, like, other drag queens that are there that can help you with, like, your makeup or help you with the wig or help you with your performance, different things like that. There's a little like photo shoot that was real cute, and like the amount of like love from like the audience there, it was just like so unique. Mm-hmm. And like such like a different performance for me, because like I could have gone on stage and just like fell over and like they would have like loved me. Like it was just like so supportive there, and it was just like amazing.
a very accepting experience. And this is a real thing. I mean, this is not just for the TV project. This happens in Denver annually.
Yeah, it hasn't happened for like the past 2 years, because of COVID.
Oh, I see. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me reintroduce you both as we talk with Bailey Mosling, a Madison area teen, drag queen, performer, and mother Dana Mosling. As we look at the TV project Generation Drag, you can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Dana, in this one episode, I watched you invite several adult drag queens from the Madison area into your home for dinner. And, you know, there's a lot of interaction in these scenes. And certainly, you know, I just was wondering how that felt to see that type of older drag queens mentoring Bailey and what that interaction was like.
We are so incredibly lucky. Our family is surrounded by a really fantastic community of other drag artists and performers. And we have been involved in that community since COVID started lifting here in the Dane County area. And all of these performers have really stepped up to support Bailey and support Nemo. During performances, they'll show up at Nemo's shows. They will repost things on Instagram that Nemo is doing.
And so, Nemo, I just want to, for clarifying, Bailey takes on Nemo, which is the female.
Yes,
female drag queen.
Bailey's drag persona is Nemo. Yep. So during the documentary series, it was such a natural thing for us to have them come over and participate in this journey. The documentary is showing Bailey and Nemo as they get ready for this big, huge event in Draguton. And that's something that we most definitely would not have been able to prepare for without the support of the drag community here in Wisconsin.
Bailey, what does it feel like for you to perform as Nemo? What does performing as Nemo mean to you?
For me, it's just like an art form. I am able to have, not always, but for most of my performances that I do, I try to have some sort of like concept. There's like a storyline. I try to give them something that they haven't seen before. I don't know. For me, it is very much an art form. And not only is it an art form, it's like a career for me as well that I want to pursue doing in the future, just because I really enjoy all the like aspects of it. I enjoy the process of it. I enjoy like designing an outfit, finding and like mixing music to like actually like seeing the number on stage. For me, like performing in drag, it's like very magical.
I wonder though, do you feel any sort of peer pressure or societal pressure to do drag, to perform in drag at age 16?
I mean, I wouldn't say that there's pressure, I wouldn't say there's any pressure. It's just like everyone's just so like supportive of me. Like I could stop doing drag and I would still have the community behind my back, and like they would still be supporting me no matter what I do. I just do drag because I find it really enjoyable and it's just super fun for me to do.
Bailey Mosling of Wisconsin, one of five teens featured on the TV series Generation Drag. All six episodes dropped recently on the Discovery Plus network. Dana Mosling also here, Bailey's mom, whose profession is as a clinical family therapist. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Generation Drag on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Playdate by Melanie Martinez that Wisconsin's own Bailey Mosling uses for a drag performance. Here's a bit. Mosling is part of a new docuseries, explores the lives of five teens who are newly embracing their love of drag and learning to be comfortable in their own skin, find their voice as part of the LGBTQ plus community. Parents interviewed for the TV series show their own acceptance, their own vulnerability. Join in 800-642-1234. The Moslings are here. Mom Dana and Bailey, they're with us for about nine more minutes. Bailey, what draws you to certain songs for your performances?
Well, for me, Melanie Martinez is like an absolute icon. I adore them. They're just like so cool. My hair is like the same as Melanie Martinez's. I'm looking forward to the new album coming out soon. Like, I could perform to any Melanie song and be like totally happy and content and be ready to go on stage in like 5 minutes. Like, I am obsessed.
Are you sure about that?
Okay. Make it like an hour.
Okay.
The fastest I can do my makeup is in 45 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah, make it an hour. Make it an hour.
Okay. But it sounds like it's more about what Melanie envelops and the message Melanie has versus what the lyrics or the song sends. Is it more about who Melanie is?
Ooh, I don't know. Melanie, oh, geez. I fan over Melanie like so easily. Like anything that Melanie does, I will like love it. Like they could scream and I'd be like, oh, that's my new ringtone. But like, I mean, for me, it's very much like I want a storyline in my performance, and all of Melanie's like songs are very suitable for that.
Mm.
And also just like the sound of like her music is very doll-esque, which tends to be what my aesthetic is. And so I just like appreciate her music so much. And I love her so much.
You know, Dana, you hear and see the creative drive behind drag. What can you tell people who are not familiar with that creativity?
Well, so first off, I just want to say, like, what we just got to hear right now was Bailey being 16 years old, right? Like, that is a 16-year-old response to, you know, what makes them feel connected to music, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to actually see Bailey take the stage as Nemo or put on the persona of Nemo, you know, after they've, you know, spent hours designing an outfit and really been thoughtful about putting together a music mix and putting makeup on, and then seeing that kind of play out on the stage for an audience is no different than like the parents who finally get to see their kids score the winning touchdown.
Hmm.
Right. So this is Bailey's thing, right? This is the thing that makes Bailey feel connected to his community, the thing that makes Bailey feel like alive and appreciated as a kid. And it's Bailey sport, right? Or, you know, any of the other things that teenagers might be into.
There have been the critics, though, a Colorado congresswoman calling, the debutante ball exploitative, example of child grooming by LGBTQ adults. Dana, how do you respond to that?
I think that's an easy way for individuals or critics to go. And it really comes from a place of just not even understanding, and not because it is a queer art form, it ends up getting this tinted lens to it, which ends up, getting labeled things like grooming, right? As opposed to if it was a coach mentor for a football player or a baseball player, we wouldn't even put labels like that on the activities that were taking place, right? If they were all going off to a soccer tournament and other soccer performers were there encouraging them and giving them tips and really just being cheering them on, we would praise that. But because it's this queer art form, some individuals will start labeling it as, things that have a negative connotation.
Bailey, you were able to see the other four profiles of, teens who are maybe a bit in your place, some expressing themselves in other ways. What did you take away from those other teenage experiences, and did you develop friendships along the way at all with those other teens on the show?
Yeah. So I was able to connect to the other kids in a way that I hadn't before, because I was able to meet them out of drag, and then I was able to hang out with them in drag, and I was just able to spend time with them, and it was oh, you're into this as well? That's so cool. I have only met one other person that's into this that's my age. Oh my God, that's so cool that you are into this as much as I am. And I overthink about who I'm friends with very easily, because then I'm oh, are they friends with me because they have other friends as well? I don't know. I just overthink that very easily. But I would like to say that I am friends with Noah and Nabella, who are some of the other kids that are on the show. We went to New York recently, and we spent a lot of time with both of them, and it was just super fun to be able to hang out with them after filming at Denver.
Bailey Mosling with us, Madison area teen, part of the docu-series Generation Drag, his mother Dana Mosling as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dana, Milwaukee's LGBTQ community has really been rocked recently by hate crimes against a transgender woman. And I'm just, do you have fears? Do you worry about threats against transgender people, people like Bailey?
Most definitely. I mean, absolutely. And most definitely in, some of our own legislation is, going to make it really tricky, not just for transgender adults, but for transgender youth and their families as well. And it's because of that that we have really worked at being as visible as we can be, so that we can spread awareness, so that people can gain an understanding that we are just a family that is doing the best that we can do to really truly honor the kiddo that shows up for us today, right? And just like any other family would. And we feel like we are capable of taking on that risk and the risks that come with being visible. Whereas that might not be something that other families are capable of doing at this point in time.
Bailey, as you look ahead, what's next for you?
I am looking at different places, different venues that are not based around alcohol, that I am able to like host family friendly shows at, have other drag youth performers come and perform for maybe the first time. I already have like hosting shows in the future, but I am really working on finding safe spaces, safe venues that younger people are able to come and feel safe at.
Bailey and Dana, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Bailey Mosling, Madison area teen drag queen performer, part of Generation Drag, the docuseries, is mother Dana Mosling, licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, news update and a story from Wisconsin Life next here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the morning show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about summer camps from a Wisconsin audience question.
Many summer camps in Wisconsin have been around for a long time. That prompted Wisconsin listener Stephanie Sticka to wonder just what gives them that longevity. Producer Alex Peake has some experience with this. She takes a trip down memory lane to find out what makes Wisconsin summer camps so popular.
That music you hear? That's a classic summer camp song. As a former camp counselor myself, this strikes close to home. Summer camps are a big deal in Wisconsin. According to the 2020 American Camp Association Economic Impact Report, 73% of Wisconsin summer camps reported being a business for over 50 years. Having such a connection to summer camp myself, Sticka's question about why summer camps are so popular in Wisconsin really piqued my interest. So I spoke with three camps to try and understand the secret sauce that has kept these summer camps in business for so long.
Camp allows kids to be kids. They love the friendships time and time again. We do these closing ceremonies where campers reflect on their experiences at camp. Almost all of them talk about the friendships that they've made and how quickly they become like their second family, and they feel like camp is their home or their second home.
That was Pat Solden, CEO of the 104-year-old Camp Manitowish YMCA. Every camp is unique, yet they all shared similar stories about the positive effects they see in their campers. Lori Estelle is the chief experience officer at the all-girls camp, Girl Scouts of Wisconsin Badgerland, which was established in 1904.
Camp is a place where girls can be themselves. They can take on challenges. They can be bold, create lifelong friendships, and be able to truly escape the day-to-day, highly scheduled world that we're all a part of today.
What stands out to Estelle is the leadership the girls develop over the summer.
Girls that spend time in the outdoors, especially in the camp environment, really have exponential outcomes in terms of leadership. And they foster those friendships that they might not have an opportunity to develop in a really tight scheduled space. Parents are really driven by the difference or the outcomes they see in their girls.
Camp tends to be an experience family members share. Another common thread that popped up is that the longer they've been in business, the more generations have attended. Take Birch Trail Camp in Minong, Wisconsin. It's been in operation since 1959. Here's Gabe Chernov, owner and director of the camp.
I think one large part of the success is that camp really gives parents the ability to provide their children with a real similar experience to what they had growing up. And we have moms who grew up at Birch Trail, learned how to water ski from our waterfront director, and now their daughters come back to Birch Trail and learn from literally the same person. And there are just not that many other places where that can happen, where time can stand still like that.
Over their many years of operation, the camps have had to adapt to the changing times and needs of their campers. And they face plenty of challenges along the way. Estelle of Girl Scouts of Wisconsin Badgerland says camp continues summer after summer because it provides the space in nature that children need to grow.
Getting outdoors is critical to the well-being of each of us, and especially children. It affects and impacts our physical well-being, our mental well-being. And then when you add in the elements of being in the camp environment, these positive outcomes are really amplified.
There are many reasons why kids come back to camp year after year. But in my experience, it comes down to making memories that will last a lifetime.
Columbia College Chicago student and former camp counselor Alex Peek brought you that story about Wisconsin summer camps. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
And now to the question of whether heat waves should have names. Would we take blistering temperatures more seriously? It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization says heat waves are among the most dangerous natural hazards, but rarely receive adequate attention because death tolls and destruction aren't always obvious. Join in with your thoughts on how to convey the risk of deadly temps. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Nick Tamaro is Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Nick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, census surveys say more than 36,000 Milwaukee area households are without air conditioning. So what are the risks of living without air conditioning?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate being able to be on and talk about this. You know, early on in the season, we really try to message that people just need to kind of remind themselves that this time of year, we really face significant dangers in heat events. We've already had two heat advisories this year. So we at the Milwaukee Health Department, we work closely with the Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management. We convene what used to be the Milwaukee Metropolitan Area Heat Task Force, and now we've kind of morphed into what's called the Milwaukee Extreme Weather Task Force. But you know, individuals in these significant events need to be aware of the signs of heat exhaustion, heat stress.
Explain the link between extreme weather and equity. How are marginalized groups more impacted by extreme weather? And what can be done to reconcile that unfairness between people who have the resources to stay cool or to stay warm and those who don't?
You know, your initial comments hit it right on the head that we do have, tens of thousands of households without air conditioning in our area. So this task force that we convene really is a group of organizations that focus on those who are more vulnerable in the area. So that we operationalize to pull together organizations, local health departments, other governmental organizations, healthcare organizations. We work with the utilities, response organizations like American Red Cross, Impact 211. So these are organizations and entities that provide resources, information, support to those who don't have resources like air conditioning, places to stay cool at home. So one of the key things we do is certainly public messaging. We work with 211. We create a list every year and we update it really within every event of sites where people can go to cool off. So we call them cooling centers, but sometimes I think that's kind of a phrase that people don't always understand. Mm-hmm. So we try to explain that these are public sites. These are things like public libraries, malls, senior centers, other community centers, other organizations that shelters, et cetera, where people can go to cool off when you do not have air conditioning at home.
Something that I've always noticed about cooling centers is you're taking people away from their own surroundings, away from their home, what they would normally be doing, and kind of putting them in, kind of like a holding pattern in a way, because of the extreme heat. And I'm just wondering what can be done at cooling centers to ensure that people are not only cooled off, and that is, of course, the purpose, but that they can still feel like they're doing things and that they're engaged with their world.
You know, I think that when we look at the places that we're recommending, libraries, malls, you know, certainly a lot of these public spaces where people can go, splash pads. So we really encourage people to utilize those resources in the community. We're working on ways to support individual households as well. We have some philanthropic organizations that have stepped up this year to purchase individual air conditioning units. And we've been working with entities like Milwaukee County Housing, Impact 211, to serve those households in on individual basis. Those are the types of efforts that I think as a community we're coming together and working among our different organizations to really try to be innovative and come up with good ways to support the community. But, you know, individual sites would, you know, specifically look at how they can keep people comfortable during these events and provide those types of activities when they're coming to those cooling centers.
I want to talk about communication, because when I look at weather, say on my phone, and I swipe through the cities where I've lived, it can be unusually hot, say 96 in Madison. And, you know, there's heat cautionary weather language on my phone. And, you know, my smart speaker is going off with warnings. But that same temperature in, say, Shreveport, Louisiana, is just another day. No warnings, no nothing weather language. With that. So why is that? People are people. They're going to be affected by heat in the same way, regardless where that heat event is. Why the difference?
Well, I agree with you. There really is no difference. I mean, as physiologically, people are going to be affected in similar ways. You know, when you look at heat exhaustion, you have symptoms of heavy sweating, paleness, tiredness, weakness, dizziness, headache, nausea, vomiting, you know. So I think people in those warmer climates are more acclimated. That's why in Wisconsin, the start of the season here, we really try to message well for awareness and things that people should watch for. And the other thing that people really have to focus on is the heat index. So we are a climate where the temperature along with humidity are really the key things. That heat index is really what drives our heat health advisories, our heat health watches and warnings. So there's really specific thresholds that we work with the National Weather Service to define what we know based on you know, a person's experience in those types of conditions.
Nick Tamaro leads emergency preparedness as environmental health director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Join in on communicating excessive heat, how to save lives, what you've experienced in heat waves, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee is among a handful of cities around the country exploring ways to use weather data and public health information to categorize heat waves. Join in on what you think of this, whether you pay attention to heat advisories, 800-642-1234. The Milwaukee Health Department's Nick Tamaro heads up emergency preparedness and environmental health, guiding us through his city's heat health thresholds and with us for about 10 more minutes. So, Nick, a city in Spain is the first city to name heat waves like scientists would do with hurricanes, like Hurricane Katrina or Rita. Names are intended to help raise awareness. What do you think about this?
You know, this is the first time hearing about it. I think it's pretty novel. I think when you think about our climate in Milwaukee, wouldn't be the first thing you think about, but I like it. You know, I think I love your point that when you hear about these advisories, do people really listen to them? So I think it's something that could get people's attention. Heat waves, you know, when you think about past events, and obviously this was a long time ago, but 1995 is really one of the events that spurred our organization around this, what was a heat task force, now an extreme weather task force. The polar vortex is really what pushed it into an extreme weather task force.
The name change there.
Yeah, the polar vortex of 2019. What some people might not remember is we had 91 deaths in a heat wave in 1995. That was a time period where Chicago had over 700 deaths. And it's something that, unfortunately, I think really can sneak up on people. And if we don't remember kind of really basic but critical needs within these types of events, where temperatures in 1995 during that stretch during July reached over 100 degrees for 2 days in a row. And the minimum temperatures are also something that people need to consider, that when you cannot cool off, when your body, core body temperature just does not go down during a time period over a couple of days, because that heat index and temperature overall does not decrease sufficiently, people can really get into trouble quickly, and I think it can really sneak up on people. So one of our key messages always, and when you bring up vulnerable populations, we think a lot about the elderly, we think about young children, and just so thinking about friends, family, loved ones, and being aware of who might need help in these types of events, who might be home, who might not have the ability to get safely to a cool area. So really just exceptionally important when we reach these thresholds that people are helping themselves and helping each other to be safe.
You mentioned the heat index earlier, and the Milwaukee Heat Coordination Plan using the National Weather Service data to split heat events into several categories. Why is the system using a heat index rather than the actual temperature?
You know, I think yesterday was a perfect example where we were in the low 90s, but I was out in the afternoon a fair bit, certainly a warm day. We did not reach threshold for a heat health advisory because the humidity was not as high. It was a windy day, and that really helped to keep things a little bit more cool. Whereas if you compare our two heat advisory days this year, that was higher humidity, and we reached a heat index of over 100. So, and I think if people would think about it, it felt very different between those heat advisory days and yesterday. So really just a key factor in how we respond physiologically to heat and humidity.
I'm thinking about back in 1995 and those deaths that you talked about in that heat wave, and just how technology has changed so much. There was no such thing as social media. Reaching people in 95 would have been vastly different than it is today. I'm just wondering, what are new ways of reaching people when there is, these extreme weather events?
Agreed. You know, certainly social media is going to be important. We have studied this. We did a CDC tool. It's called a CASPER, a Community Assessment for Public Health Emergency Response. What it is an epidemiologic tool where Department of Health Services led it, but it was in Milwaukee. We were in a number of neighborhoods across the city doing a survey. The interesting thing is that a lot of people are still getting their messaging and information from things like radio and TV. And so everyone always talks about social media, but I would stress that oftentimes, you know, perhaps even those who might be more vulnerable, elderly and children, we can't rely on social media for all of that. So again, we have to be thoughtful about who is most at risk and make sure that we're thinking of them and messaging appropriately. For us and the organizations we work with, again, Impact 211, just an outstanding and critical resource for the community for reaching all kinds of resources. But during heat events, that's a key number for people to call to seek assistance. And then thinking about
That's okay. No worries. Let me reintroduce you here as we talk about planning for heat waves with Nick Tamaro, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. You can join in on how much you listen to those heat advisories, what they mean to you. Do you pay attention in heat waves? How do you prepare? 800-642-1234. Nick, we heard from Phil in Whitewater, called in, couldn't stick around. And they say that many older buildings in the Milwaukee area often have windows that are painted shut, which really limits the amount of natural airflow in a house or an apartment building. And they say code enforcement is really key to fighting these heat waves. What would you say there?
Agreed. Yeah, certainly if you're working with a landlord or a property that is not up to code, certainly, you know, windows that are painted shut is not okay. So Department of Neighborhood Services and, you know, a call to a governmental agency to really have an inspection and ahead of time to really correct those types of problems in a home if you're renting.
You know, there sometimes is adequate time to prepare for extreme weather events, but, you know, snowstorms and low temperatures can also give meteorologists a bit more of a problem. They can be a little bit more tricky in forecasting. And I'm just wondering, what about extreme heat? Is that easier for them to get right in order to prepare people to take precautions?
It is. And so we work closely with the National Weather Service. Tim Halbach has been just an incredible partner. He's the warning coordination meteorologist. He's taught me and you know, others I work with that temperature is one of those things that they're able to predict much more consistently. So not a perfect science, but just when you look at the modeling and I think people joke, but when you look at what organizations like the National Weather Service are able to do to give us the information they do, it's pretty incredible. So heat and extreme heat and extreme cold are something that we can have more of a heads up on and can prepare for, as opposed to things like, you know, your perfect example of snow, highly unpredictable. And, you know, I was a kid with Tim that I loved to cross country ski. So I wish he was better at predicting snow. But definitely with heat, we generally have a heads up. And then if we have an advisory or warning out and we get a reprieve, that's a welcome change.
I want to circle around in our last few moments here to the Milwaukee Metropolitan Extreme Weather Task Force. What is the next step for the members here on this work? What are you working toward?
Yeah, a couple of key things I want to highlight. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Dan Buckler is an urban forester, and he's bringing a Milwaukee heat mapping campaign to the state here. So that's taking place this summer. So mm-hmm. It's really residents are volunteering to go out on certain routes throughout the city with equipment to map out the city. We also created, along with the Department of Health Services at the state level, we work closely with the Climate and Health Program, a heat vulnerability index. So that really allows us to map the whole city mm-hmm. and region to look at the most vulnerable areas. So we use that information to really target our outreach and target resources, just exceptionally important to be able to reach those that are going to be most in need.
Nick, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you very much for the time.
Nick Tamaro, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.